In 2019, I decided to quit my job. I was working at a tech startup in Nairobi, a company that I had worked for close to 3 years. I thought I would work longer, but when we decided to settle down with my then boyfriend, now husband, I felt an overwhelming desire to quit and build a different life for myself, for the future of our family. I wanted to be the primary caregiver for the kids that we would have, and I knew my current job would not allow me to do that. On the other hand, I had no intention of being a full-time stay-at-home mom. I still wanted a career, not sure which one, but it had to be something that would give me the flexibility I desperately needed. I got pregnant right after we got married, and all of a sudden, I felt like I had no time to build this new career that I wanted. For a year and a half after I left, I experienced career grief. I felt like such a failure. I thought I had made the wrong choice and I wasn't too sure what I would do about it. I had no clue what my future would look like, but after I accepted my situation, the stars aligned and I was able to build the future that I had pictured when I sent in that resignation letter. Today we will hear from a mom of three who also went through career grief. She experienced big moments of transition, and we will follow her on the journey that she went on to find her purpose. This is the first episode of the third season of the Mama Tales podcast. I'm your host, Sally Kuria. Growing up, Nyashomba didn't really think about having kids. She grew up in a typical middle-class home in Nairobi. After she finished school, she lived the typical life of a 20-something-year-old. She embraced spontaneity. She worked really hard at her job. Her job had her traveling across the country. And that just helped her live in the moment. When she met her husband, things started shifting a little bit in her head. She says that she looked at him and she started to see how they could start a family. After a couple of years of marriage, things took a bit of a turn. Her husband worked for Chase Bank, and in 2016, it collapsed and her husband had to look for another job. Thankfully, he found one, but it was in Abu Dhabi. They had to leave their home and build a new one in the UAE. And in the middle of all of this, Nyashomba discovered that she was going to be a mom.
I had had an implant, the one underneath the arm, for I think it was like 3 years or something. And then again, remember when I was telling you how when you start looking at your husband, you're like, okay, I could see myself having a child with this person. So then you decide, okay, any contraception, we're taking it out and we're going to see what happens. So I think in 2016, February, I decided to take out the implant. I remember I went to Valley Arcade and I was telling my best friend, like, okay, I'm getting it done, let's go. And then psyching myself up because I was like, how are they going to take that thing, cut a slice off my flesh and pull it out? So they took it out, and of course you automatically think, okay, once it's out and the first time like we seriously try, it's gonna happen. So I'm like, okay, February nothing, March nothing. And then you get into this cycle. It's so unfortunate because you get into this cycle of like, why isn't it happening? You know, and that's when I realized, you know, a lot of women, we can take for granted the fact that we automatically assume that it's going to happen. And we're not taught at that time. Maybe now there's a lot more information. I'm talking like it's the 70s, but you know what I mean. At that time, you're kind of like, no one ever tells you that it can take longer. And I think I didn't have like a group of aunties who were open to telling me that, you know, it can take longer. So February, March, April, May, June, everything, it's just nothing's happening. And then I'm crying. And then my husband's just telling me, you know, we just have to wait. Like, just chill. And, you know, it's a very weird feeling. It's hard to describe. And I imagine for me, I mean, it was just a few months, but for some people, it can be years, you know? It can be absolute years. So, of course, on the flip side, for me, a few months was nothing. But in that moment, it feels like it's the biggest thing in the world. Like, it's just going to take such a long time. So, kept trying. And then I remember then my husband got an opportunity to move to the UAE. I think that was in September, October. And he had to leave before me. Because I still had my job. I was working a beautiful consulting job and I still had to stay. And then we had been still trying. And then literally, as soon as he left is when I was like, okay, my period's not come. And then I was like, okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We've had a few months of things being expected to happen and not happening. So I remember, I think I had missed, my period had not come for a few days. And then I was going for a movie with a friend in Westgate. And I kind of just mentioned it to her and she knew that I was trying. So she told me, you know what, why don't you just go to the chemist and buy the thing? So I was like, okay, I'll go to the chemist, I'll buy it. I'm not going to do it, to do the test, because I want to do it with my husband, because he was now in Dubai. I grab the test, go for the movie. I'm just waiting for the movie to finish quickly so that I can go home and log in on Skype and tell him, okay, dude, let's do this. So I think it was an evening movie. So we finished the movie, drove back home really quickly, told him, okay, dude, log on to Skype, let's do this. So I went on to Skype and then did the test, logged on to Skype, had the call, caught up, and then it was positive. And I was like, okay. So you're in Dubai, I'm here. I'm trying to navigate how I'm going to close off my work here. What is this baby going to be born? Like, you know, just like, but of course, being very excited that it had finally happened.
So you're pregnant and there's a lot of changes that are happening, right? I've had, you're moving countries, your career is on another kind of trajectory. Let's look back at those first initial months of like, this is what's happening. I need to like settle into this new life.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because all my children, all my pregnancies have had massive transitions in the time. So with my first Theo, I was moving from Kenya to the UAE. With my second, she was born, I think 6 weeks before the world shut down for COVID. And then with this one, we've just moved house, which is a huge transition. But going back to 2016, 2017, when I had my first. So I was talking about it like a few months back on my Instagram about career grief. So I was going through a massive career grief at the time, because what dawned on me is the remote work hadn't like picked up as much as it had at this time. And the work that I was doing was climate change adaptation monitoring and evaluation. So it was in consulting. So you're having to meet clients. And the whole reason like our office had been opened was to give access to clients in the region. So part of my work, yes, was sitting at a desk and like writing reports and writing papers, but it was also, you know, having to travel around the country, around the region, around Eastern Africa. It just dawned on me that moving away was not going to work. And then I was moving to a country that didn't really have the best, what is it, climate change records or climate change action record, of course, because the biggest, I mean, one, their construction is just very destructive, a huge fossil fuel dependent country. So their laws are very restrictive to spouses working. So on the one hand, yeah, my husband has this wonderful opportunity, and then I'm just going to move. Luckily, I kind of negotiated with my employer and told them, you know what, let's see how it can work out. I can try to do some work that just requires me to be sitting at my desk and not really having to see clients, because my visa process would potentially take a long time. I was having to be back and forth between Nairobi and Abu Dhabi every 30 days. So I did that for a few months. And then now it was like, okay, so I'm pregnant. So should I have a doctor in Nairobi and then a doctor in the UAE? And then in the UAE, you have to pay out of pocket, because if you don't have a visa, a long-term visa, you can't get insurance. And of course, the UAE is not cheap in any way, shape or form. So it was like, okay, now what's going to happen? And then, you know, I don't know why, I just asked my friends, you know, who, give me a gynecologist. I need an OBGYN. So luckily we found one, and she was excellent. And I explained to her the situation, and she just said, you know what, we're just going to play it by ear. We'll see what happens. For the first, oh my God, like from the time I found out I was pregnant, which was around September or something, till May, he was born in June, till May, there was no confirmation that where I was giving birth. Yeah, so it was a very stressful time, but I think the kind of personality I have is I get anxious, but I just move. I think it's my Mount Kenya genes or something, you know. You just move. What option do you have? You just have to get it done and look at options and see what works, what doesn't work. But then luckily my insurance and everything came, and visa came in May. So then I was able to give birth in June in Abu Dhabi.
So at this point, it's your husband who's your support system. Do you have any family or friends in UAE?
So I mean, literally we had been there less than a year. Looking back at it, it's amazing how I didn't fall into some kind of depressive state because I was by myself. My husband was working. He was working for one of the biggest banks if not the biggest bank in the Middle East. And the working culture there is very different. It's very long hours, and then working weekends, and so very, very difficult. So I was very isolated. I was all by myself, and living in we lived in a very beautiful part of Abu Dhabi. But I mean, what difference does that make if you're by yourself? So, you know, so it's just the two of us for a long time. And I remember even the day I landed in Abu Dhabi on my birthday, and I think we only had like a bed, and my husband had bought some cake and a plant. He bought me a plant for my birthday. So it was very alone. But again, I don't know. I just move, you know, I just make it happen. So we didn't have any support. All we knew coming closer to the birth was my mom was going to make it. She had booked her flight for around my due date, either a few days before my due date or the due date itself. But then, of course, you're told, oh, you know, first babies, they take a long time. Huh. I think Theo's due date was like June 24th or something. So I had a really good doctor. She was Egyptian, beautiful. She helped me give birth to both the first two, at least. Go to the hospital, like, I think on the 16th of June. And then I think I had already started dilating or effaced, whatever they call it. But all I know, like, movement was happening, but early movement. But then the doctor decided to kind of, so she checked my cervix and then felt very uncomfortable. And I was like, okay, A few weeks later is when I realized that was a membrane sweep she'd done, but she didn't tell me that she'd done the membrane sweep. But then membrane sweeps don't necessarily, especially with first-time moms, the probability of them working is very low. So I was like, yeah, even if she did, nothing's going to happen. That was at like 6 o'clock. By 11 p.m., I was in labor. And of course, that was 38 plus 5 weeks. So my mom hadn't even, it was too early. And I didn't know what labor is supposed to feel, to feel like or look like. Or, and my husband had been working the whole day. And even as I was in labor, he was working. So then I tried sleep and I couldn't. And then I told him, dude, you go sleep. One of us needs to be rested. So he goes to sleep and I'm just walking around, very uncomfortable. But I didn't know that I was in labor. I was still like, I don't know what it's supposed to feel like. It's my first time. I'm just having like some pains. I don't know if I'm supposed to count or so. I'm trying to count. It's just difficult. I didn't have an app. Like I was prepared, but I wasn't prepared. Then, yeah, I'm kind of in labor by myself in the living room because I told him, you need to sleep. In the living room from like 11 to like 5 a.m. I didn't sleep. And then I had a bath. I think, yeah, I kind of just like tried to make myself comfortable. Then at 5, I told the dude, we have to go to hospital. This is not working. So call a taxi and we run to the hospital and we walk in. And then my doctor's not there. And then there's this, resident doctor. And she kind of measures me. And she's like, oh, you're 4 centimeters. I'm like, what? What do you mean I'm 4 centimeters? Where has that happened? So then she says, oh, you know, we can send you back home or we can get you a room here. I'm like, I'm not going home. Figure out what's going to happen. Yeah. So then they admit me. They start giving me all sorts of medication. And then they had a, you know, they have this meters they strap on you to check how strong your contractions are. So mine was like almost 100%, but then they were coming like every minute or something. But then, of course, I hadn't slept. I hadn't eaten. Or I had only eaten dinner. And then when you get to the hospital, they don't really allow you to eat. So then over like 8 hours, they're just coming hard and fast, but not moving really quickly. And they're giving me gas in there. They're giving me, I think they gave me pethidine or something, whatever. All so much stuff. Then at 3, I'm like, dude, I cannot do this anymore. And my husband, I think my husband was made to be a midwife. He's just very calm and very supportive and very like, he just managed the whole situation very well. And of course I was in so much pain, but he managed to stay cool headed. But yeah, I think that's his personality as well. So in so much pain at 3, I'm like, bloody get me that epidural. I need it. Give me the epidural like at 3:20. The guy was born at 4. The epidural didn't work. I went from 7 centimeters to like 10 in like 20 minutes or something. And then just ring of fire, everything done. And I'm like, okay, that epidural that we spent, I think 50,000 Kenya shillings on, it's just a waste. And it happened with my second as well. It didn't work. So both times I've had to. So yeah, so then luckily my mom, and that's what I was so thankful for living in the UAE. It's so close. There are like, I think how many flights a day to UAE. So yeah, she came the next day and luckily she was with me. She was with us for like 4 weeks. And then my husband's parents came as well, for another like 4 or 6 weeks as well. So we had the support. And then of course, once there's something that happens, when you have a child, that my mom told me a long time ago, you know, you children are the ones who made me talk to people. And I always used to wonder, like, what's that about? And I just noticed, you know, my loneliness stopped when I was pregnant. I may have been lonely, but when I had Theo, like, I reached out. I started seeking, actively seeking community, actively seeking other moms, actively seeking other kids for him to not necessarily play with, because, of course, below 1 year, there's no playing. They're just, like, next to each other. But I now started seeking more communities, trying to find out, you know, were there mom groups in where we lived. And it really changed after that.
Yeah. It's amazing that even in that space, you were able to find support when you needed it. Because I would imagine the fourth trimester could look really different if you guys didn't have your parents around and your husband was at work and you're alone in this big, massive country. So how did your life change as you're just settling into this new normal?
I think one is, how did my life change? I think, you know, your whole existence changes when you become a mom. There's this saying that everyone says, you know, you feel like your heart is out of your body and completely, like, it stops being about you and it starts being about this baby that you've given birth to. And, you know, of course, the first few months you're just high on, is it oxytocin? Is that what it's called? Yeah. The hormone that just makes you just fall in love with this little thing. So I think actually that's a really good question, Sally, because I said in my 20s, I was so carefree and spontaneous. And I just, yeah, it was just about me and not. But, and I never thought I would be those moms. You know, those, like, I never thought I had that mom thing of, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but I never thought I'd be, yeah, maybe I'd never imagined what a mom was like. But I fell into full mom mode, you know, like, just full earth mother vibes. It was crazy how, you know, just being so happy breastfeeding and making sure that I was eating right and he was eating right and he was well taken care of. And I remember the stupid things we bought at that time, just trying to make sure that this baby, like, I remember there was one time we're like, oh my God, he's lying too much on his back. His head is going to be flat. Let's buy this pillow. And then, oh, Suji, what, you know, like, full on, like, just that's the only thing you can zone in on. And you just want to be your best in that moment for him and for you. And I'll also say that my newborn experiences have been very, not very difficult. I don't want to say difficult, but I've been blessed not to have any, like, super massive hormone dips or postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety, which is, again, very surprising because I was also very isolated. And, you know, even when your mom is around, when you have other people around, it can also make the situation very stressed, because, you know, they're telling you, oh, you're supposed to do this way, but you're like, oh, no, but we want to do this way. Then it can create some sort of friction. But I managed it really well, and the breastfeeding was difficult. I remember coming back from the hospital and my armpit was swollen, like super swollen. I couldn't put my arms down because apparently some people have, like, mammary glands underneath their armpit. So, like, my whole armpit on my left was completely swollen. I couldn't put my arm down. And then my so engorged, so from across my armpit into my left boob, and I remember having to, like, milk myself in the bathroom and telling my husband, "You need to come and milk me because this it's not working. I literally can't put my hand down." And I'm like, "Why are we not told these things? Like, what is happening? Like, surely." Yeah, it just stops because even in that discomfort, it's not about you anymore. It's about, okay, I need to sort myself out so that I can take care of this person, this little baby. And yeah, I could not, in those first few months of my fourth trimester, and I couldn't understand this version of myself. And I'm sure my mom would look at me and be like, who is this person? So it was a version of myself that I had never known or even thought that could exist. But she existed, and she threw herself into raising my son. And I think also it was triggered by the fact that when you're living abroad, you're, apart from being his parents, me and my husband, being Theo's parents, we had to be everything else, because he doesn't have his aunties there, he doesn't have his uncles there, he doesn't have his grandparents there. So you're carrying the weight of you being his parents, but you also being his whole world. So that was not at the forefront of my mind, but it was something that I was just like, I'm not even taking on any work. I don't want to work. I'm like, I don't even want to look for work. I don't want to look for a job. Basically, for the next minimum two years, my sole focus is on my son, which I never thought that I had never thought that that was something that a decision that I would have made.
And why are you able to achieve 2 years without thinking about work and all that?
I was. And also the newness of this version of myself kept it so exciting that I never felt like I was missing the work bit. Because like, oh my God, I can, you know, you go into 6 months, you're doing the baby-led weaning, you're cooking all sorts of things, you know. And then when they start walking, you're like, okay, let's now start going to the park and all of that, and organizing play dates and meeting friends. And then when they start like being very present and all of that, you're like, oh my God, I'm going to set up Montessori sections and all of that. And, you know, and also my son is just, he was such an easy child. Even I was just trying to remember, I can remember he probably had like, you know, those screaming, throwing yourself tantrums maybe twice in his life. He's always been really, really calm. So that made it a lot easier for me to be present and be happy in that time. So I really, honestly, I didn't think about work at all. It's almost when he now started getting closer to two, where I was like, no, I still had bits of work, teeny, teeny bits, but it was never, it was kind of like, yeah, I'm just doing it to keep myself busy, but not at it to build a career or anything. I just said this, I'm happy to take a short-term sacrifice for a longer-term benefit.
Let's talk about when your daughter came into the picture.
Well, I always knew I would never work in the UAE. It was never going to happen there. I didn't like the working culture. It was too hectic. If both of us worked, it would mean like, we're only seeing them at the weekends. And that's not something that I wanted. So I kind of had an idea that I would never work, but I was open to the fact that, you know, I could take on a consulting job that if it gave me like, okay, a few hours a day where I can just shut myself off and work. And I started doing that closer to when he was older. I'm happy to do that, but it would never be like a full-time working position. And of course, for some people it happens, but once you start seeing your child being independent, you're like, okay, why not encourage it? So by the time he was 20 months, I had put him in some sort of play group so that I could have my, you know, some space to think about things or do whatever I wanted. Yeah, then we started trying again, thinking that, oh, it's just going to happen quickly. No, took another few months of tears every month for like 3 months, but then it happened. And then I was like, why bother doing anything? This is the difference between those pregnancies and this one. It's like, for me, it was like, why bother even looking for work? And I'm going to be pregnant and taking care of two children. So just shut it down. So I completely switched off and I was like, you know what, again, let me just concentrate on. And I mean, luckily we were in a good financial position where I didn't, yeah, for me to be able to do that. So like, okay, let's do this with baby number two, finish. Have her, and then after we have her, but and we always knew like the UAE was never going to be long term. By the time she came, we had been there for like 4 years. So we're like, okay, yeah, so now we need to figure out, make moves, because once we were not going to pay school fees in the UAE for sure, and we didn't want them to start going to school in the UAE. So it was like, we always knew wherever we go next, I'll hope it will be in a place where I can work or actively work. So yeah, so then when she came, I was like, okay, let's see what happens, being open to anything. And then she came in January 2020. And my mom was supposed to come in February 16th. They shut the borders on February 15th. Like literally February 15th. And she's supposed to come the next day. So we're by ourselves, like literally ourselves, because if you know the UAE, they had some of the strictest COVID laws in the world. Like you couldn't even see your neighbor. You couldn't even walk on the street. We were being given permits to go do, you know, your food shopping. And so we were isolated for almost 6 months. And so we, on the plus side, yeah, it was sad we were indoors. But then on the sad side, but on the plus side, my husband was home all the time. And so we were in this newborn baby bubble for like 6 months.
Some part of that sounds like torture.
We thought it was going to be, but it was so nice for Asia, my second, because she was surrounded by her family all the time. And because my husband was more present with her, not that he wasn't present with Theo, but he was working so hard. But with her, like even now, with Theo, like if he was hurt or anything, he would always come to me. Like mommy was, you know, front and center. With her, sometimes she's just like, yeah, I don't even want you. I want my father, you know. And then, the transition, we're like, okay, we're not going to pay school fees here, because if we pay school fees here, Nyash has to start working and making mega bucks. And we don't want them to be like, I don't want to say expat brats, but I'm going to say it. Like the UAE can be very elitist, especially around the expats, and we didn't want that. That was very clear in our mind, we didn't want that. And my husband had been getting tired of his job, so then we're like, so in October we're thinking, no, we move house. We're like, okay, my husband's working from home for the foreseeable future. We need more room. We're in a two-bedroom flat, so then we moved to a four-bed villa in September. Really beautiful villa with a huge garden for the kids. We bought outdoor furniture. We were now thinking, okay, maybe we can make it work for another 2 years and then move on. And then I tell my husband, you know what, start looking for jobs. You know, there's no harm in trying. Reach out to the people you've worked with and then see what happens. And then he starts reaching out and kind of gets called for an interview with a company, a Dutch company he had worked with before in Kenya with Chase. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we've got a position here. Would you be interested? So we're like, okay, yeah. But then it was a position for Middle East and Africa. So we always thought it's either going to be Dubai or Africa, Kenya or South Africa, one of the two. So we're like, okay, that's fine. That works. You know, that'll give, if it's Dubai, we just get to stay here a little bit longer. If it's Kenya or South Africa, Nyash can work. It's fine. Perfect. And I can even get help. Then they tell us, after we've moved into the villa, and the job is in the Netherlands. So we're like, okay, Yeah, so then we're sat there thinking, okay, Asia doesn't have a passport because the Kenyan embassy has been shut for God knows how long because of COVID. Netherlands, never been on our radar. I've never lived in Europe. I mean, the UK, is the UK Europe? I don't know. New language, how does that work? So then, you know, sleepless nights, pros and cons list, blah, 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 blah. And then we do the pros and cons list and the pros outweigh the cons. But then we're thinking about, okay, all the other logistical nightmares of having to do this. And we're like, okay, let's see what happens. And they're talking about wanting him by December. And it's October. Yeah, then we have to sell everything. All the stuff that we had bought for this new villa that we had gotten. And we give away lots of stuff. And then now we had also now built this wonderful community with our friends. I couldn't even tell my friends for the longest time we were moving because it was so upsetting, you know. So then, yeah, so then we're like, okay, it's for the family, for everyone, this is going to be the right decision. But then it's going to be hell. From October to November to December is trying to get my daughter a passport. The Kenyan embassy are not helpful at all. Trying to now start doing the paperwork for the EU, for the Netherlands, getting our marriage certificates attested and all of that, and recognizing that it's probably not going to happen. We're not going to go all at the same time. But then again, my Mount Kenyan-ness comes out and like, okay, let's just look at options. What happens? Worst comes to the worst, we go home to Kenya for a few weeks and then we join you. And then we just keep pushing the dates forward. So he came to the Netherlands in February and we had to go to Kenya with lots of drama because the day we were supposed to fly back to Kenya, we think we have all the requirements. We go to the airport in Dubai with our thousands of bags. We get there and they tell us, oh, Mama, you have your COVID test, but the kids don't have it. And I'm like, where in the world were they testing kids? Oh, but Kenya requires your children to be. So then we have to move the flight and then go back. Anyway, it was the most difficult time of my life, just looking back at it. But, you know, we just moved. So we made it to Kenya, stayed. I mean, my family met Asya for the first time she was one and a bit, and they had never seen her. So they had never seen her. So they met her one and a bit. We stayed for 6 weeks. We reconnected. We got all the paperwork. We drove to Nakuru to get Theo a light blue passport because he had a dark blue one. I said, oh God. And then, yeah, then we made it to the Netherlands and then we could breathe again. And then, yeah, and then since then we've been here and it's been, yeah.
We will be back with Nyashomba's story after this short break. The move to the Netherlands for Nyashomba and the family was scary, but it offered new opportunities. Being a country that encouraged part-time work and shorter working hours, it meant that Nyashomba was able to finally start thinking about working again.
I felt like, okay, this is a perfect place where, like, I can go back into climate change work and I can either work for an NGO. I mean, there's so much. You can work for the council, you can work, there's so many opportunities. And then also, most people think, oh, you need to learn Dutch, but you don't really. Everyone speaks English. Most big organizations are English speaking. Like, you hardly ever need any Dutch. So it was perfect. And then I think I call it my year of serendipity. Things just started falling into place that I would never have seen or never expected. So I first started working with my friend, my online friend, who's become like yeah, we talk like every day, Wanjiko. And she kind of started telling me, you know, Nyash, you've been off social media for a long time. Why don't you, I'm trying to get into content strategy and content marketing. Would you want to kind of rejig your Instagram again and get back on? So I told her, well, I guess I have time now. So let's see what happens. So we start working together and I get back into, you know, posting more and talking more. And I had been in Kenya and the UAE, but it had been infrequent because it was kind of like, okay, what am I really talking about? It didn't feel like it was grounded in anything, you know. And so we started working together and started, you know, content planning and all of that. So that worked out well. And then as I'm picking up speed on Instagram, this life coach, Nina, gets in touch with me and she says, you know, would you be interested in life coaching? So at that time I was like, oh my God, that's just like some American motivation mumbo jumbo. I was in my head, I just saw Tim Robbins and I was like, I cannot with those people. Like, I don't understand what that stuff is and I'm not sure. But then I was like, you know what, why not? So she offered me like 6 coaching sessions and I was like, well, let's try. And there was one thing she always told me is like, you know, these sessions are for you. They're your time. You treat them like they're your special time. Protect them. Make sure that, you know, when you have the session, you don't have any kids around. Like, it's your space. It's your time. And I really appreciated that because I realized, you know, maybe I've not been doing that. So we had the sessions and we ran through them and, you know, we ran through career grief, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, running a business, why can't I do this, blah, 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 blah. It was just lots of limiting beliefs and changing the way I had viewed myself and the way, you know, how I had parented, how my marriage was. Like, we just went through everything. Every session was eye-opening. And I was like, oh, okay, there's something to this life coaching thing. But I had still never thought that, you know, I would end up there. So we kept doing that. And then at that time is when I started the mindful planning. Like, it was just through the sessions, I just started finding this courage to do things and do things for myself rather than, and I don't, it's not that my husband, like, I think because he also had so much time, we could sit and discuss how it could work. And so we're talking and I'm like, okay, let me try offering these workshops. So I offered the mindful planning workshops, like, I think 2 of them, to 10 women for free, and just to test out the concept. And it worked. And I was like, okay, let's do this. And at that time, it was not a career thing. It was just, okay, since it's a skill I seem to have, let me try. So then we do the first 2, they go really well. Then I start charging, start doing every 2 Saturdays a month. And it's going really well. But then there's just that something that's sitting in me that's saying, you know, I'm not giving my clients enough. I'm not giving my clients enough. I don't feel qualified. I feel like I'm just using this thing that I like doing to offer to someone else, which is ridiculous, right? Then I was like, no, I need to give them more. So then I said, by the end of 2021, I was going to sign up for a course to understand the psychology and the, you know, the coaching, all that science behind this work that I had now moved into. So then I said, by end of 2021, I have to find a course, pay for it, get it done. And I did, and it was very expensive. It was like in the, 4 figures. And I just told my husband, and for the first time, yeah, let's figure out where this money is coming from, because it was such a big decision for me, because I don't think I always felt like, am I worthy of that much money? Like, to, you know, like, you, if your child needed anything, you'd be like, yeah, let's do this. But for me, it was, but it was, I think the coaching had completely turned on different ways of my confidence showing up. And I was like, yeah, we're going to pay for it. And yeah, this is it. And it was not in an effort to be a life coach or to work in life coaching. It was in an effort to do better for my clients who are learning to plan. How can I give them more, you know, not as a life coach, but as someone, okay, so you've learned how to plan, but how can I help you with the deeper things that are stopping you from planning or stopping you from doing things? So it was never in an effort to be a life coach. But then again, and I don't, there's just something that pushed me now to start doing things for myself, and not in a selfish way, but kind of now, okay, now the baby's time is done. Let's now move on to me. And there was a power that was coming out, and I can't describe it. And I did it, and then I just decided, you know what, let's just try and see if I could work. And the Instagram stuff is going on, the connections are going on. 2021 was also my year of making loads of connections. I was learning, I was growing, I felt like I was offering something, and I was using my values, my gifts that I had never seen before, that were now being really illuminated, if you can call it that. I just decided, you know what, I love my climate, and that's why if you go on my LinkedIn, I have three identities. So I'm a climate change adaptation specialist, because no one can ever take that away from me. I am a mom, and it's there on my profile that this is my continuous job, and I am a life coach. And before, I could never see any of those coexisting. It was either one or the other, or it was one and the other was painted away. It was not appearing at all. And then I was just like, you know what, that's absolute BS. Like, every part of me should be allowed to take space in my head and in my body and in the way I present myself. So then, yeah, so then from there, it's just been, okay, I'll do this for now. If I ever go into climate change stuff, I can do it. If I want to try something else, I can do it. I'm not limited. I don't have to be in a certain space forever. Or, yeah. So I think that was a very pivotal year for me to see things differently and for me to show up in very many hats and be happy and content in those hats. And, yeah. And then I got pregnant again.
Yeah, that's yeah, and I have a feeling, like, I don't know what the answer is, but I have a feeling that this pregnancy carries very different emotions and fears and challenges and than your first two, because you're in a very different space, right?
This one is a very strange one, you know? It's weird, because with the other two, it was always like, okay, this is just going to be some extended maternity time, and, you know, there's nothing else. But with this one, it's so hard. I keep journaling. I keep trying to figure out what's going on, and I think you've captured it, because it's just a different pregnancy at a different time in a different space, and not physical space, but mental space, because I'm kind of like, can he just be born already? So that we can move on and I can get back into work. And I love my work. I don't know why. Like, I'm just like counting down to May to get back to work without guilt. Like, I'm not even feeling guilty. I'm like, and I think it's such a good thing you've asked me that question, because I don't have any guilt, because I know that when I make time, I purposely make time for each of my children. And with this one, I wouldn't be feeling guilty that I'm working. I will be so present for this child because I have figured out what my balance is. I have figured out what my routines are. I've figured out what works well for me. I will have to figure out what works well for him because, of course, we don't know. But I'm whole enough in myself and my routines and my plans that there's no guilt there. So even when I say, oh, I'm going back to work in May, or even I'm going back to work middle of February, I'm okay in that because there's nothing missing in me. I know what is enough. I'm not coming from a place of scarcity. I'm coming from a place of, yo, even if one day we're not able to work, there's still another day that we can do something else. I mean, God willing, inshallah and everything. But yeah, so I think that's why I've not been worried, because I've been trying to figure out, why am I not worried about how this is going to pan out? But it's because I'm okay in myself and I'm okay in the structures that I've set up and everything that I've done for myself and for the family, that he's just going to come and we'll just take each day, be present for each day as it comes. Yeah.
Nyashomba lives in the Netherlands with her husband and 3 kids, Theo, who's 5, Asia, who's 3, and little Noah, who's just a few weeks old now. She is a life coach, and I recently became a client of hers, and she really gave me useful tools to navigate some big things in my own life. You can find out more about her work at nyashomba.com, that's nyachomba.com. I will leave all her details in the show notes of this episode. Thank you so much for listening till the end of this episode. I am excited to kick off season 3, and I have lined up some pretty amazing stories. So be on the lookout for that in the next coming weeks. Would you like to share your story on the podcast? It's pretty easy. Just head on over to our website, that's mamatillspodcast.com. You will see a link to a form where you can fill in real quickly and give me a little information about what you want to talk about. You can also find the link in the show notes of this episode. See you in 2 weeks.